Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. And this is Love Your Breeds. This is our special series that we're doing on some of our amazing purebred dogs. And a lot of the times we're able to talk to people who have dogs that you've never heard of. And in this case, that's what we have. We have an opportunity to be at the Harrier National. And we are joined by five Harrier fanciers and a Harrier named Lucy. And I'm super excited for everybody to get an opportunity to learn about this wonderful, wonderful breed that is not very common, and you're not going to see one just kind of walking down the street, right? So I'm going to ask everybody to go in a little circle, introduce yourselves, and we'll get started.
My name is Eric. I am husband to Donna, who is the only Master of Harriers in the United States. I guess I got involved in this breed when I met you 7 years ago.
Excellent. Donna?
I'm Donna Smiley. I've been active in Harriers since 1989. Breeding, showing, raising, hunting. Oh, I've done obedience, I've done agility.
Wow.
A little bit of everything. I've been past pretty much everything in the Harrier Club. President, treasurer, secretary. I'm currently the judge's education chair. Harriers
Excellent.
Are us.
Harriers are us. I love it.
And Kevin Shapina with Kingsbury Harriers. And we raise beagles, Harriers, and English foxhounds.
Excellent. And we're going to talk about this. These are not the same breed.
Correct.
Yep. Excellent.
I'm Linda Johnston, Sakura Harriers. I've been in Harriers since 1996. I am the owner of Lucy.
Lucy. Hi, Lucy. Lucy the Harrier has joined us.
Our little visitor here today. Been a long time, just fell in love with the breed because a friend of mine had one and I brought her to my house and my daughter fell in love with her and been in the breed ever since.
Excellent.
And I am Christy Bowers, the most novice of the group. I have had a Harrier for a little over 10 years and this group has mentored and helped me to learn to love the breed. And I can run a meeting, so they asked me to be on the board this year. That's me.
You're it. Awesome. This is what happens when you're smart in dogs.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a wonderful group of knowledge, wonderful group of people. And I'm actually going to start with you, Christy.
Okay.
Excellent. Because this is for anyone who ever wanted to get a Harrier. Why did you choose a Harrier?
Well, I didn't choose the Harrier. My husband did. He came to me at one point and said, I would like to get a Harrier. And I said, a jet is not in the budget. And so he said, no, the dog. And I had no idea what a Harrier was. So we looked it up online. He actually, I think, contacted Donna by email. We ended up meeting up with, because we're from the Bay Area in California, we met up with Linda at the Golden Gate Kennel Club, met Harriers. Getting a Harrier is a little bit like being approved for a loan. You need to meet a few people. They need to decide whether or not you're going to be a person blessed with this beautiful breed.
Are you Harrier worthy?
Yes, exactly. You have to be Harrier worthy because there's so few litters of this beautiful breed every year, anywhere between, I think, what, 3 and 5 litters a year?
Zero
to five litters a year. So we waited about a year and just fell in love with the breed, and we are just madly in love with our Harrier Bray. And so just became advocates of the breed, starting as a pet owner and talked into this show world and mentored by all of the people here that you've met today. And that's how we ended up here.
Excellent. And so I think that Donna gets to answer this next one. I'm doing some picking and choosing. So everybody just join in when we get to a question that you have something to say about. But I think it is fascinating to me that you have such a low registration of Harriers. So can you talk to the numbers? How many Harriers are there in the United States or in the world? Do we have that number?
We estimate that in the United States, just based on the few number of litters that are born every year, there's probably less than 300.
Less than 300
total in the country.
Wow.
I mean,
okay, you guys, we've talked about otter hounds. Now we're even lower than otter hounds.
Yes. Oh, yes.
There's probably more tigers in the U.S. than there are harriers. Yes. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So why is it that there's only 300 harriers in the United States?
A catch-22. People may stumble upon us by accident and go, wow, I really like one of those. You have to get on a waiting list. Oh, and then you contact them 6 months later when you have a litter and they're like, oh, my neighbor's lab had some mutt puppies and I got one of that. I don't need a harrier now.
Right.
So the availability isn't there, so...
Okay, so if you're...
Supply and demand, exactly.
Supply and demand. So if you are interested in a harrier, you need to be willing...
Prepared to wait.
To wait to get a harrier.
It's lucky that people will call and say, I really want one. Like, well, as it happens, I have a litter. And sometimes that happens, but you cannot count on that. It's not like you can go out next weekend and find one.
But I'd say an average wait, though, is 4 to 6 months.
Probably, yeah.
4 to 6 months, Kevin, you think that's how long?
That's probably a good average.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We waited a year. Mm-hmm. Last year, it was a little rougher. I think we had 2 litters total last year.
In the entire country.
Yeah. Yes. So Lucy was out of one of the litters.
So harriers are legitimately what we consider an endangered species.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
An at-risk breed.
Yes. Okay, pay attention, people. An endangered species right here at the dog show.
Well, they're just as cuddly as pandas.
I think they're
smaller than pandas, and you can house train them.
Yeah.
Yeah, the interesting.
And they're definitely smarter than pandas. Sorry.
I've seen the panda videos. Yes, yes. I agree.
But also one of the breeds. It was one of the first in the AKC stud book. I think it was one of the first 5 breeds.
Yes.
Right?
In 1888, I believe, is when they opened up. We were, alphabetically, we were 5th because H's came after the Beagles and a couple other breeds.
Clumber Spaniels were in
Clumbers
there.
Clumbers were in it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's 5 breeds, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the history of this absolutely rare and endangered species. How did we come to have harriers? Because we know that there's beagles,
right.
That they're little,
yep.
And we know that there's foxhounds,
right.
They're big.
Yep.
Harriers are medium.
Yep. The records that we can find and verify from England, of course, they're an English breed. The harriers most likely predate both the foxhounds and the beagles. Beagles are closer to us. We go back and forth on who came first.
Interesting.
But you have to look at the history of what the quarry was in England. You know, 500-600 years ago, the royalty, of course, was very much involved in controlled hunting. It was only the aristocracy that could hunt.
Correct.
It wasn't the peasants. So the 3 main quarry that the royalty considered worthy of being hunted was stag, boar, and hare. Well, boar was quickly eliminated from the country, so that boar hounds went by the wayside. So then you had stag and hare. Fox hunting came about later. Some stories say that there was a minor noble that got in trouble with the king and was banned from hunting stag and hare, so he and his buddies started hunting vermin, which is fox.
Interesting.
Fox is considered a vermin species.
Interesting.
So that's one story.
And fox hunting is now like very much about tradition and all the pretty outfits and horses.
Exactly.
Wow.
So there's records going back to the 1100s of harrier packs in the UK.
So harrier were used to hunt
hare. European hare, which are very large.
Big rabbits.
Yes, and they're different than rabbits, which is very important. The beagles were developed to hunt rabbits, which are smaller and have a much different lifestyle.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So Donna, what is the difference between rabbits and hares?
He beat me to it. Good job, Kevin.
Total different species. Hares are born fully furred up, eyes open, and running practically hitting the ground. Their mothers do not have a den. They are born in a set, which is a small depression in the ground, and within an hour or so of birth, they are able to run and evade being eaten. Rabbits, on the other hand, are born in small burrows, fur-lined, naked, eyes closed, and for several weeks before they come out and are able to go around. So it's a very different lifestyle.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so rabbits are little furry creatures that we're familiar with.
Right.
Hare are much bigger furry creatures that we're not familiar with.
Snowshoe hare is
one. Okay, there you go. Good.
Jackrabbits here in the U.S. are actually hare.
Okay.
The European hare, the European brown hare, they are very big.
They
are big.
They weigh
15 pounds or more.
They're the size of a beagle almost.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and they run very differently than rabbits. hares, because they don't have a hole in the ground, when they are pursued by hounds, they will go. They will cover acres and acres and miles in a circle.
Oh, in a circle?
They circle. They circle back to their home territory.
Rather than diving for the ground like a bunny would
and
do.
And a rabbit, if they're pushed too hard, meaning if something's too close to them, which harriers, if you hunt them on rabbits, that's overpowering the rabbits, they bolt down a hole as soon as they can find one, and that ends the chase. Mm-hmm. So that is not appropriate. Your fun's over because they went down a hole.
Right.
But beagles, being a little bit slower,
they're smaller.
Right. They don't push them as hard, so the rabbits will run rather than just bolting down a hole.
So a harrier is about, what, 20 inches tall?
They should be 22? 19 to 21 with an inch either way. 35 to 55 pounds is probably the
versus a 13 or a 15-inch beagle.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
So that's why harriers hunt hare and beagles hunt rabbits.
Okay. So you run the only harrier pack in the country.
Right.
There are very few packs of any kind of foxhound or beagle.
There's
or any.
Quite a few, but most people don't know about them.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a Master of Foxhounds Association of America that governs the foxhounds. And there are more different kinds of foxhounds than just the ones we see in AKC shows. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's probably 40 packs in the USA.
Yeah. 40?
40.
Okay, so that's more than people would realize.
Right, and there's beagle packs, probably
hundreds.
Yeah.
Hundreds of beagle packs. It's just we're the only harrier pack.
Okay, but so then the really cool part is a harrier who is in a harrier pack can also go to the dog show.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a huge thing, because in the sporting dogs, we see tremendous sort of differences.
And that's something we never want to see. We want to see no dichotomy between, we don't want to have a show hound and a hunt hound.
Right. Nice.
Exactly.
Nice.
So. The harrier is very versatile.
Yes.
I mean, maybe you can all talk to the things that harriers do, which is everything.
Okay, so harriers do everything. Let's talk about Lucy, who has planted her foot on your chest.
Yes. She saw the monkey in the mirror.
Yes, she saw the mirror. So talk to us about these hounds in a home environment. Many hounds are what we would think of as the ears turn off, and they're not necessarily people dogs. You know, hounds are not notorious to be people dogs. Talk to us about harriers.
Because being licked to death, she can hardly speak right now.
Yeah. Harriers are wonderful in a household. They adapt to the lifestyle that you live. So they can be a couch potato if you want a couch potato. They can be as sporting as you want if you like to run. They love to run with you. They go jogging. They'll do mountain biking. They go hiking.
Run marathons.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
We have several that are with marathon runners. Yeah.
So they're fantastic for that because they are, you know, really, really settle into a household. They are not a breed to ignore. They have to be part of your family. They do not do well if you put them in the backyard and ignore them.
This is not a kennel dog.
It is not.
They can be.
They can be, but they find their own fun. And if you live in a residential neighborhood and you have a hound sitting in your backyard that's not being loved and interacted with on a regular basis.
Needs a job.
They will find their own fun. They will dig holes. They will jump fences.
They will howl. They will sing to everybody in the neighborhood. They will chew. They will break.
So it's important that they don't get bored.
Yeah, so you've got to keep them entertained.
Well, they're smart.
You have to
do a job with
them. Give them something to think about.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
They'll think about something to do.
It's a misconception. A lot of people say, hounds are dumb. They are not dumb.
They are
independent. They are self-thinkers.
Yes,
there's a big difference between intelligence and trainability.
Right.
Yeah. The smarter dogs are harder to train because you say sit and they go, why?
I didn't really want to do that now.
You need to tell me in four different languages why it is it should be important for me to sit for you right now.
It needs to be their idea? I find that in my breed.
So doing obedience with a beagle, which is a very similar kind of thing, I could go and train them and you do everything perfect the very first time. Not the second or third or fourth time. Because by then he's like, we did this last week. Why don't we do
That's
this again?
Boring.
I'm over it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's find a new game.
Yeah.
And going back to the trainability aspect of it, you need to look at how hounds, what purposes they had, and why they have this kind of intelligence as opposed to the sporting breeds. Sporting breeds were bred and created to work very closely with man, to take direction. When your field dogs are out, you know, you can give them a whistle or whatever to go left, to go right, to stop. You know, you are directing them. Hounds, pack hounds especially, it was their job to figure out how to find the hare, how to get to it. Is there a fence? They figure out how to get through it, over it, under it, and go. It's not being directed by, oh, everyone go left. No, everyone go right. No, it's their job.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So that kind of intelligence is different. They were bred
to be problem solvers. Yep. Whereas a lab, you have to tell it what to do. Right. I grew up in the South with Labradors and you point.
If Harriers went to college, they'd study engineering.
Yeah. They're problem solvers.
Probably.
I like that. I like that. Okay, guys. We're going to talk to Cheryl Kreitzer from showdogs.org. So join me. Cheryl, we're talking today about the Winner's Gallery, right?
Yes. I see these magazines that pop up and they've got all kinds of ads in them. And if you don't walk by the box of magazines at the show, sometimes you never see them. Well, this site that I've built is worldwide. It's for the entire dog community. It can be any sport. It can just be a brag. We do have a winner's gallery on the site where you can go, you can post your wins, your major wins, your points. You've got a leg in obedience. But there's also a gallery for best in shows. Best in specialty shows, and the all-elusive national best in specialty shows. And to get in that gallery, you only have to do $10 for 30 days. You can do as many as you like. I want to see all the dogs in the dog community.
I love it. What a great resource for everybody to be able to see all of these dogs and worldwide. So listeners, check it out. showdogs.org. And we are back to the podcast. So, quick question, and maybe, Kevin, you have an answer for this. Who makes a great Harrier owner, and who would be challenged by this breed?
So, I think an active family or an active person is a great Harrier owner. It's definitely somebody with a backyard and a fence.
Yes.
This is not an off-leash dog. Now, that's not to say that we don't have some owners that really well-train their dogs and go hiking and take them off-leash. That's the exception, though, not the rule.
You can do it with the training, but it's not automatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I think you have to have a pet owner that loves to laugh at their dog because they are naughty. They will do things. They will figure out things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had ones that figured out how to open up doorknobs. Yeah. We had one that opened refrigerators.
So smart, and you need to be able to laugh at them.
Exactly. If you get mad at them, I mean, it's not going to help.
They just laugh at you.
Their sense of humor is a survival tactic because they do stuff that you just want to kill them, and then they do something so goofy you just bust out laughing and almost pee yourself.
Well,
and
Lucy's like, now going to be a lap dog.
Yeah, she's
so they have some lap dog features.
Yeah, she's working the crowd.
She's a baby.
Yeah, awesome.
They cuddle really good.
I would say you have to be consistent, but I think that's with any dog.
Any dog, right.
But,
that's
it's really even more so important with them and set those expectations. Our dog is an only child, our Harrier, and we have an upstairs, downstairs. We taught him not to go upstairs. We don't have any barriers. We have nothing. He just doesn't go upstairs.
Boundaries.
He knows that we don't go upstairs.
But they were consistent in training it, wasn't it?
Right.
You can go up on Tuesdays when we're watching Game of Thrones, but you can't go up there any other time or something.
And they will train you if you don't train them.
Yes.
For example, when he goes outside and there's a squirrel and he goes nuts, and then I call him in and tell him I'm going to give him a treat. Now he'll go outside, bark, turn around and look at the door and say, like,
where's my treat?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm an idiot for that. But, they're going to take advantage of that because they're smart.
Right. And I think I love that. And I love the idea that you have to be willing and physically in a position in your home environment to have a dog who's vocal. These are hounds. Speak to the giving tongue, that how they hunt.
That is very much ingrained into them. That is how, when you're hunting them, how you can tell what is happening. A lot of times you can't see them, but you can tell by the noise and the chop that they make.
What does a chop mean to our
people? Chop is a type of bark. It's not a howl. It's a pop, 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 pop. And that indicates
yip, yip, yip.
It usually means they're on a hot scent. They've either seen quarry or they're close enough to it that they can smell it and it's very fresh. So it has to be very vocal. If you can't handle that, don't try and turn them into something that's silent. It's just not.
It's right. Not going to work.
But
on the other hand, they don't bark for no reason. No. They do bark when they're bored.
They're excellent watchdogs.
They bark when the doorbell rings. They bark, when they're chasing a squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like they just, because somehow people have this image of beagles and harriers and foxhounds, that they just sit there for no reason and bark all day. They don't do that.
There's something.
There's got to be something that they're barking at. I mean, you have them in the backyard and a bunch of kids go outside the fence. Yeah, they're going to go along the fence and bark.
Right.
So with a golden retriever. I mean, it's... It's just their bark is loud for the size of the dog.
Right, and the bay and the howl and some of the things that are just sort of their nature And I think it's so important as we talk about purebred dogs to understand why you buy a purebred dog is because you know what to expect. They are predictable, yep, and they are consistent. And so a Harrier is going to consistently be more vocal than another dog, but vocal in a very specific way.
Yep. And they do make excellent watchdogs, which is different than a guard dog. Yes. They will alert you to something, and then it's your job to determine if it's something that needs to be upset about. Or, you know, if someone breaks in, they will probably lead them to the cookie jar, and then be their best friend. Yeah. You know, they're not going to attack.
Right.
But
they're not going to bite anybody. No, but they're going to tell you there's somebody there.
Behind the door, they can make very big barks, and people who don't know wouldn't know that they could walk in without getting attacked.
They thrive on routine.
Good.
Very much so.
Good.
If you feed them at 6 a.m. every morning, they will be awake at 5 to 6, and they will know that it's feeding time.
Time changes suck.
Yeah, time changes really suck.
Hey.
Yeah. I have a foxhound up in Canada that brings the leash to the owner, whether it's Monday or Saturday or whatever, at 7 o'clock and drops it on his bed and says, we're going for an hour walk.
Oh, my gosh.
I would say,
same type of
that
thing, though.
Said, our Harrier at home, you know, we have kids and schedules and times,
right.
And you know, I'll go open the crate for him some days, and it's 7 in the morning, and he's just like, yeah, I'm not done yet. I'll be out when I get out. Like, I mean, you know, and that's fine, too. Yeah. So, I mean, I think there is some
flexibility.
But
they're not like a hyper breed.
No.
Like, I don't feel like this is a hyper,
no,
constant, perpetual motion kind
they're
of dog.
They're active, but not hyper. It's totally different. They were bred for endurance.
Right.
This is a dog that'll do 20 miles with you, go to bed, get up in the morning, say, we're ready to go again.
Right.
Another 20 miles.
Yeah. So. Right. So that marathon runner, you're looking really good here.
Yep.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about what do we encounter with health issues with this breed?
Generally a healthy breed.
Okay.
I mean, we're a breed of one-ofs. We'll have one that gets something.
And everyone's like, have you ever heard of this in the breed? And we're like, no,
no.
That's the first one I've seen.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have some one-ofs, but generally speaking, a hearty, healthy dog. A typical lifespan, 12 to 15 years.
Okay. And healthy, hearty,
healthy
the whole time you're going.
All the way through.
Nice. Lucy really wants to have something to say.
You've got 1,000 years of kind of selective breeding through the packs. That's
right.
Where they all came from. And a dog that wasn't healthy wasn't bred.
Right, because
it
this was a
hunt.
Form and function.
If it
couldn't hunt, then it didn't exist
and
in the
And do
past.
You see more of them worldwide? I mean, 300 or so
there
here in the
are,
States?
It used to be that England had more packs, and their laws over there outlawing hunting have hurt that greatly. Now, currently, New Zealand has more packs of Harriers than the UK.
But those are in the hunting packs only.
There are some in Australia that are now being shown. But
there's a pack in Trinidad.
Yeah, there's some in Trinidad.
Okay,
now.
So there are a few more out and about around the
country,
around the world.
Yeah, we've got some hunters in Greece that are using them, some different areas. So,
okay, excellent.
There is hip dysplasia in the breed.
Okay, pretty normal, large to medium-sized dog.
Yeah, I've had ones, I imported one from England several years ago. It was one of the only ones that was an OFA severe.
Okay.
And he still hunted once a week. So,
interesting.
We neutered him, of course, never bred him,
right.
But it exists. But in general, it does not seem to cause problems as long as they're kept in a proper weight.
And they're athletic enough that they have
the muscles
to compensate.
To
hold
that
up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So. Excellent. And so, talked a little bit. Let's go back and touch on that some more. Other things that you can do with your Harrier if you're not necessarily going to be in a Harrier pack. Barn hunt,
scent work,
agility. There are some phenomenal Harriers doing agility. Their natural athleticism just lends itself. Jumps, they can do it from a standstill sideways.
Yeah.
And I've seen them literally go over, just pop over,
Tracking.
And Linda?
Tracking.
Yeah, okay.
Therapy, I used to use my old girl for therapy visits. She would go
nursing
to senior
home
homes
and
do that.
So lots of opportunities for people to participate with their Harrier in a community setting.
Absolutely.
And
there's been a couple service animals that have been Harriers.
We've done obedience with them.
Obedience.
Retrieving is not normal, so that can be a challenge. But
I taught mine to retrieve when he was really young. So he'll go for the ball about 10 times, and then he's like, really?
You don't want it.
You throw it away, Mom.
Yeah, you don't want it. But I've seen Harriers who, if you throw a ball, look at you like, are you crazy?
threw
get
away.
The ball. So you idiot. You threw it. So
you must know.
Okay, so back to that whole smarter than you part.
But they're not like the sporting dogs who will get the ball for half an hour and they keep going.
And that's part of when you're training them. You cannot drill them like you would like a border collie. They're just like, again. No. If you do it more than about twice, they're going to get bored. And
you keep it interesting.
Yeah.
And you approach everything in five different directions.
And in short.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Super short little bits.
I do, when I start working them in obedience, if I'm trying to teach a certain behavior, I do it four times, boom, done, walk away. We've sat four times in a row. We're going to call it great. We walk away. We may come back later that day and do four more, but we always just do a little set of four and walk away. And that is the way that you get through and you get more consistent. If you sit and drill them for 45 minutes on sit, you'll get it, and then they will say never again.
I'm over it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And be sure the first time you get the behavior that you want. If you allow them to have a sloppy sit the very first couple times that you're teaching them sit
and heel,
they're going to, they can pick it up that soon. So
interesting.
Just start.
Be on top of it.
Okay. We like to play games too. Like, we do a game at home called Find It, and I just take pieces of kibble and I actually make him sit stay in the other room, and he does. And then I go hide, 10, 15 pieces of kibble. I drag some of it across the floor so he can get the scent, And then I let him go and I say, find it. And he'll spend, the next 10 minutes. But he loves that game.
Awesome.
I think that helps the brain as well, And it's what they're bred for,
it's problem
right?
solving.
Is to find things.
Mm-hmm. It's a problem solving,
Absolutely awesome. Okay, so in closing, each one of you, starting here, the very, very best thing, what made you fall in love with Harriers and why you will never have anything but a Harrier, they're the greatest dog in the world. Go.
The personality. I mean, it's a very social animal. And, it's independent, but their personalities. You'll just look at them, and they'll do something, and you laugh, and you say, I love you.
And then I love Lucy. Yep. She's looking right
exactly.
at us.
Exactly.
Done.
I agree. The sense of humor. The worst day at work or in personal life, world could be falling down around you, and you go home to them, and they do something so silly, or they just come up to you with that grin, and you just start laughing.
That face.
Yeah, that face. Yeah.
So that's...
And I think for me, they're an athletic and they're a true dog. What you see is what you get. You can't hide anything. And they're athletes. They've got the bone, muscle, and that's what you get.
I love it.
I fell in love with the personality, and I fell in love specifically with Mary. Mary was an amazing dog. My daughter was born 8 months after Mary was born, so they were very close in age. And when my daughter was learning to walk, Mary would come over and stand next to her, and Mary would wait patiently while my daughter would grab her hair and stand up, and she would lean against Mary, and Mary would take two steps to the side.
Aww.
And my daughter would step with her, and if Shannon fell down, Mary would step back in close enough so she could pull herself up.
Aww.
And learn again. And at that point...
So great with kids, I'm hearing.
Oh, absolutely.
Really
phenomenal.
Good with kids. At that point, I had to have Harriers.
Nice.
So... As a new person to the breed, I love their intelligence. I love their personalities. And my dog makes me laugh. He just cracks me up. He does the quirkiest, silliest things. And, that's part to their personalities. I don't know that I've ever met a Harrier I couldn't love or didn't like. And there are some other breeds where I've met the dog and said, yeah, I'm not wanting to take that home. Right? But I think I would take any Harrier home any day of the week. Yeah, exactly.
Right? Here you go, Merry Christmas.
And I aspire to Donna with 35 Harriers.
Oh, my God.
So I think it's a great family dog, and I think it's a best-kept secret, truly. And I'm not sure we want the secret out entirely.
Well,
I think in places
more than 300 would be okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's get them off the endangered list.
Exactly.
And here's another one I just was thinking about. These are pack hounds, so you're not going to encounter a lot of inner dog aggression.
No, absolutely not.
Nope.
They mix. They even raise with cats.
You can raise them with cats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a Labrador Retriever in our kennel, and he thinks he's a Harrier.
We got him at 8 weeks and raised him with a litter of puppies.
And we put him in, when he was at 9 weeks, we put him in with an older bitch, to nanny him. And she kind of looked at him and said, you're a funny looking puppy, but okay. Hey, that'll
off
be
you
great.
Go.
Yep. He just thinks he's a hound.
He thinks he's a hound.
Right.
Can't howl, but...
I think that's one of the things that we kind of lose track of with these pack hounds is that they are bred for millennia. to get along because they have to hunt in a pack. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We could all learn from harriers.
I love that.
Yep.
I love that. Okay. Any other parting words, real quick? I will include information for the Harrier Club, the National Club. Mm-hmm.
If you're all interested in Harriers, contact the Harrier Club. A lot of times, yes, there are some areas that don't have any, but we do try to keep track of our pet people and other folks that if you're in New Jersey, there may be a club member in Connecticut that has a Harrier, and mm-hmm. we like to get you, say, here, here's their contact information.
Meet one.
Yeah. Go meet one. Get together with them. And we've done that quite a bit with different folks. Yeah. We can work with you usually to find someone so you can go meet one.
Beautiful. You never know pet people. You might end up being an agility people or confirmation people.
Or a send down people.
Or whatever it is, right? But you can go expand your horizons with your Harrier.
And if puppies aren't your thing, we do have older retired hounds that are just as awesome.
Yep.
You know, a lot of people retired show dogs make
great pets.
I think that is a case, and I think that is actually one of the long held secrets of dogdom is what amazing pets retired dogs make because they've seen and done and encountered everything.
And hounds and harriers are not like some breeds that if you try to like rehome a German Shepherd, it's not to, you know, cast aspersions, but I know it's difficult for them to switch to new people, new families. Harriers are very adaptable.
Whoever feeds them and loves them.
If I see a dog that, you know, I placed years ago, it may take them a minute, but they'll recognize me, and then they'll get very happy. But I'm happy to see them loving their new family. So
awesome. That's a great one.
They can adapt very well.
Yeah. That's a great one.
They're little rock stars wherever you take them, too. I mean, when people see a Harrier.
They tend to be pretty level-headed, stable-minded.
Well, yeah, and they come up and they ask, you know, all about them. And
that's just a wonderful dog.
Yeah, people just think, he's so beautiful, and he's so this and that, and he's so, you know, friendly and outgoing and all these things. So
I know. The other thing, grooming. They shed.
Yes, they do.
They do.
They shed like any other dog except for, what, three other breeds?
Yeah. Okay.
They're so wash and wear, though. I'll tell you. Clean the ears and you clip some toenails and give them a bath and they're good.
And you're done. Yep. Good. Yep. All right. Excellent. Well, thank you, one and all, so very much. Lucy, your patience has now reached its end. Yep. I see that. Lucy tells us it's time to end this interview. Thank you all. I really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Awesome. All right, crew, we are back with Allison Foley from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. Welcome, Allison.
Hi, Laura. How are you today?
I am excellent. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. So today you have some wonderful tips for us on proper attire for the show ring.
I do indeed.
I'm so excited.
So, I mean, I think that the problem with talking about proper attire, especially in this day and age, is that we can't tell people what to wear and we can't dictate, you know, unless we're wearing a uniform, something, you know, it's all personal style and how somebody feels about something, etc. So that being said, I do think we have to realize that the sport of showing dogs is, first of all, a very conservative sport.
Mm-hmm.
Most women that are professionals, and we are all competing together, whether you're an amateur, an owner handler, a breeder, or a professional. So you are competing against the highest level when you are competing at a dog show. And those people are going to be dressed like a professional. So as much as you might like to walk your dog in the park in, you know, spaghetti straps or a tube top and flip-flops.
Please don't.
Yeah, you probably look fabulous. In the dog show ring, that's just not going to cut it. Even if it's in an outdoor event, you know, in a big, huge park or whatever, it's just really, really how you're expected to dress. So think of just dressing conservatively. You know, most women are going to wear skirts or a dress. Most men are going to have a sports jacket on. And really be careful of your shoes.
Yes.
You know, you are running around often slippery surfaces. Even the grass outside can be slippery. Or you're in a building where there's mats and extension cords, etc. So closed-toed shoes for women, I know that this isn't the time of year to say that, but I do think that that is really important.
Absolutely critical. And a couple important things to add to that, cover the parts, right?
Yes. I mean, it is important. It is important to remember that
we are in a very conservative and very professional sport. So, you know, ladies, you need to have that sports bra. And guys, you know, you need to watch what the judges are doing. If the male judges are wearing their shirt and tie and jacket, then, you know, I think that's a pretty good code to go by, that you should be doing the same thing. If the judge is getting more relaxed, takes off his jacket, loosens his tie, then I think that that's okay for you to do the same thing.
Well, and this time of year particularly, some of these outdoor shows, it's 100 degrees.
Yeah.
Take your jacket off. It's okay. But the judge, as you say, the judge will signal.
Yes. The judge dictates what you do.
Exactly. Another one that I think is a good mention, along with the heat, keeping yourself cool, keep your dog cool. You have to keep yourself cool. Doesn't do anybody any good if you go down from heat prostration.
Yes, exactly. And it is a fine line, especially this time of year, between dressing conservatively and keeping everything under control and under wraps, but not overheating yourself.
Yes, absolutely. One other point, speak to pantsuits. I've seen women in pantsuits more recently.
Well, and, you know, I think that that's the thing. You have to realize that there are styles and trends that are coming along. And yes, I don't think that there is a problem with a pantsuit. As long as it is tailored and doesn't look sloppy, I don't think that there's a problem with that at all.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much, Allison. Pure Dog Talk listeners, remember, Pure Dog Talk 25, and you get a 25% discount on your Leading Edge Academy dog show courses.
And we're really excited because starting in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have a subscription service available. So you could subscribe to everything in our school. We're going to start adding weekly content for our subscribers. So now's the time to check us out.
Excellent. Good news. Thank you, Allison.
Thanks, Laura.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.